person who was at the Three Boars earlier that day who could have taken Payton's shoes. A person who knew Aykroyd well enough to know about the dictaphone. A person who had the opportunity to take the dagger. A person who had the study to himself for a few minutes after the crime was discovered, and who had with him a receptacle for hiding the dictaphone, such as a black bag. In fact, yourself, my dear doctor.
You're mad.
No, I am not mad.
What on earth had I to gain by murdering Aykroyd?
Safety. It was you who blackmailed Mrs. Ferrars. Who could have had a better knowledge of what killed her husband than the doctor attending him? When you spoke to me that first day in the garden, you mentioned a legacy. But that was your way of accounting for the £20,000 you exacted from Mrs. Ferrars. You lost most of it in speculation. And then you put the screw on too hard, and Mrs. Ferrars took a way out that you had not expected. If Mr. Aykroyd had learned the truth, he would have had no mercy on you. You were ruined forever.
And the telephone call? You can explain that, I suppose.
I will confess to you that it was actually my greatest stumbling block when I found that a call had actually been put through to you from King's Abbot Station. And then, when I came to see your sister that morning you were over at Marby, I inquired what patients you had had on that fatal Friday. Among your patients that morning was the steward of an American liner, the Orion. Who more suitable than he to be leaving for Liverpool that evening? But on what pretext did you get him to phone through to you from King's Abbot Station? I sent a wireless message to the steward of the Orion asking him a certain question. This is his reply. Dr. Shepherd asked me to leave a note at a patient's house. I was to ring him up from the station with the reply. The reply was no answer. It was a clever idea. The call was genuine. Your sister saw you take it. But there was only one man's word as to what was actually said. Your own.
And so what happens now?
Remember what I said. The truth goes to Inspector Raglan in the morning. But for the sake of your good sister, I am willing to give you the chance of another way out. There might be, for instance, an overdose of a sleeping draught. You comprehend me? Captain Ralph Payton must be cleared. I suggest you finish that journal of yours.
A strange end to my story. I meant it to be published as the history of one of Poirot's failures. Odd how things pan out. My greatest fear all through has been Caroline. I fancied she might guess. Well, she will never know the truth. There is, as Poirot said, one way out. What shall it be? Béranger? It would be a kind of poetic justice. Not that I take any responsibility for Mrs. Ferrars' death. It was the direct consequence of her own actions. I feel no pity for her. I have no pity for myself either. But I wish Hercule Poirot had never retired from work and come here to grow vegetable marrows.
In The Murder of Roger Aykroyd by Agatha Christie, dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat, and Dr. Shepherd by John Woodvine. Roger Ackroyd, Lawrence Payne. Raymond, Peter Gilmore. Caroline, Diana Olson. Miss Russell, Eva Stewart. Flora, Zila Clark. Mrs. Cecil Ackroyd, Joan Matheson. Ursula Bourne, Karen Archer. Hector Blunt, David Goodland. Inspector Raglan, Richard Tate. Inspector Davis, Simon Cuff. Ralph Payton, Paul Sir. Kent, Peter Craes. Hammond, Alan Dudley. And Parker the Butler was played by Derek Giler. The play was directed by Enid Williams.
What's happened? Why have we stopped?
It's nothing serious, mademoiselle. A small mechanical fault. It is being attended to.
Where are we?
About 40 miles from Aleppo.
Is there likely to be much of a delay?
Who can tell? They are doing all they can.
But is it going to make us late?
I trust not, mademoiselle.
I have to change trains in Istanbul. If there's delay, I shall miss the connection. Don't you understand? It's absolutely vital that I catch the Orient Express.
We present John Moffat as Hercule Poirot and André Morin as Monsieur Bouc in Agatha Christie's Murder on the Orient Express.
You have a room reserved for me, I believe.
What name, sir?
Hercule Poirot.
A room with a bath.
That is correct.
This is the first time you've stayed at the Hotel Tocatlia?
It is the first time I have stayed in Istanbul. Something I have always dreamed of. And since I have a few days to spare, I thought I would break my journey from Damascus and play the tourist for a few days. Santa Sofia, the ancient walls of the city.
There is a telegram here for you, Monsieur Poirot.
Thank you. I fear I must ask you to cancel my room. I am required urgently back in London. Santa Sofia will have to wait for another occasion. At what time does the Orient Express leave?
At 9 o'clock.
Will you see if you can get me a compartment on the Calais coach?
There should be no difficulty at this time of year, Monsieur Poirot. The trains are invariably empty.
You are certain?
Quite certain. I will see to your booking straight away.
You are very kind. I shall take a little refreshment in the bar.
My dear Monsieur Poirot.
Ah, ça alors, quelle surprise!
Monsieur Bouc!
What are you doing in Istanbul?
Ah, unfortunately, I am about to leave it. But it is very good to see you, Monsieur Bouc.
You are here in your professional capacity?
I had hoped to be here as a tourist. I have been attending to a little matter in Syria for the French army.
And you are returning home?
Such, it seems, is my fate. I leave by the Orient Express.
But that is splendid, so do I.
Ah,
at least I go as far as Lausanne. It will be a real pleasure to travel in your company.
McQueen, sir. McQueen, has all the luggage been brought down?
Yes, Mr. Ratchet.
Every item you've checked?
Every item, Mr. Ratchet.
Pay the bill. It's time we were gone.
Sir. What a repellent-looking man.
Oh, just another American tourist.
Oh, no, my friend. That man is not another anything. He's like a wild animal.
Oh, he looks perfectly respectable to me.
Ah, it may be so. But I cannot rid myself of the impression of an almost tangible evil.
Monsieur Poirot, I'm extremely sorry, but there is not one first-class sleeping berth to be had on the Istanbul-Calais coach.
Oh.
It is fully booked.
At this time of year? Impossible. But do not worry, my friend. I'm not a director of the Compagnie des Wagons-Lits for nothing. I shall find a compartment for you on the Simplon Orient. Never fear.
No, Monsieur Bouc. It is quite impossible. I am sorry, but every compartment is taken. It is incredible.
Michel, what is happening? Is it some kind of convention? A party?
No, Monsieur Bouc. They are all ordinary passengers. It just happens that many people have chosen to travel tonight.
At Belgrade, there will be the sleep coach from Athens, but we don't reach Belgrade until tomorrow evening. What is my friend to do tonight? Is there no second-class berth free?
There is one, but it is a lady's berth, and there is already a woman in the compartment, a lady's maid. She is a German.
How very awkward. Have all the passengers arrived?
I believe so. No. There is a gentleman in number 7, a second class. He has not yet come.
But the train leaves in 4 minutes.
He is an Englishman, Monsieur Harris.
If he's called Harris, he certainly will not come. He will be like Mrs. Harris, the friend of Sarah Gamp in the novel by Dickens. She did not exist.
Put Monsieur Poirot's luggage in number 7. If this Mr. Harris arrives, we will tell him that he is too late, that berths can only be held until 5 minutes before departure. We will find him a berth at Belgrade. Understood?
Understood, Monsieur Buck. If the gentleman would be so good as to follow me, I will take him to compartment number 7. Is this your luggage, Monsieur?
Thank you. And thank you, Monsieur Buck.
It is the end compartment
exactly
but one, Monsieur.
You can't apply American standards out here. It's just natural for the folks to be indolent.
Excuse me, madame.
Oh, yes,
pardon.
Of course, of course.
In my country, it's just the opposite. Okay. Something to do with the climate, I think.
Pardon, madame.
Yes, madame.
And I said to him, you call it that, making a sale? I sold the 22 in one morning.
Pardon, signor. Here is the compartment, Monsieur.
Excuse me, I think you've made a mistake.
You are Mr. Harris, perhaps?
No, my name is McQueen, but I thought this compartment was booked.
Monsieur Harris has not arrived, and there is no other berth on the Istanbul-Calais coach. The gentleman has to come in here.
Oh, I see.
If you will allow me to put your luggage on the rack, monsieur.
Oh, of course, thank you.
Yours is the upper berth, monsieur.
Mm-hmm.
The train starts in 1 minute.
You really must have quite a pull with this company. I've never seen a conductor put a passenger's luggage up before. If you'd rather have the lower berth, sir, I mean, it might be easier for you.
No, it will be no trouble.
Please, it won't inconvenience me in the slightest.
No. Then I accept. After all, it will be for one night only. At Belgrade, I shall...
Oh, you're getting off at Belgrade.
No. You see, I...
Ooh. Looks like we're off.
I didn't see you at breakfast, mon cher. I trust you slept well.
I always sleep well on trains. Ah, this is a really excellent lunch, Monsieur Buck. You keep a very high standard.
It is the premier train in Europe. What else will you expect of us?
I only hope your passengers appreciate it. They are a very curious selection.
Ah, if I had the pen of a Balzac, only he could do this little scene justice.
Quite an idea.
It has not been done, I think, and yet what a wonderful novel it would make. All around us are people of all nationalities, all classes and all ages. For 3 days, these people, strangers to one another, are brought together. They sleep and eat on the one roof. They cannot get away from one another. Just look at them, of you. Take those 3 men at that table there, thrown together by chance, and yet already they seem to have something in common.
In my country, we never do things by halves, huh? If we want something, we go for it.
Just the same with us. If you're going to do a thing, hit it right on the head.
So look at me.
An Italian who looks like a bandit from the Abruzzi and a very large American in a very loud suit.
Who might perhaps be a commercial traveler. But the fastidious little Englishman who is with them looks as if he wishes he were at another table.
As far as I am concerned, unobtrusiveness is a much underestimated virtue these days.
A rather superior servant, perhaps.
And what do you make of the astonishingly ugly old lady in the sable coat?
That's so?
Yes, madame.
You will be good enough to place in my compartment the bottle of mineral water and the large glass of orange juice.
Certainly, madame.
And at dinner tonight, you will arrange that I shall have chicken cooked without sauces, also some boiled fish.
Oh, of course, madame. I will see to it.
She looks as if she would be more at home at the court of Catherine the Great. And what pearls!
You are not far wrong, you know. That is the Princess Dragomirov. She's extremely wealthy.
I've heard of her.
Quite a personality. Now, take the that woman over there. The American lady with all those rings on her fingers.
My daughter told me, take a book of food tickets and you'll have no trouble. No trouble at all.
Not much in the way of aristocracy there, unless it is the aristocracy of money.
It just isn't so. It seems they have to have a 10% tip.
She has not stopped talking since she sat down at the table.
Did you taste that mineral water? Why can't they use Evian or Vichy?
Oh, it's because they must serve us the water of each country. Each country we're traveling through.
Oh, really?
And as for that dowdy Scandinavian lady, does she not look to you exactly like a sheep?
Oh, now you are not kind, Monsieur Bouc.
Now, who is that mysterious-looking woman who sits with them and who doesn't speak a word? Quite a beauty in her way, but certainly not an innocent abroad like the stout American lady.
Now, there I think I can enlighten you, my friend. She is an English governess traveling home from Baghdad. She and that tall, lean, military-looking gentleman at the next table, who is pointedly trying to give the impression that he does not know her, were traveling together on the Taurus Express, which I boarded at Aleppo. They went through a very pretty comedy for my benefit, pretending not to know one another. Very reserved. Very English. And then, when the train stopped at Konya, they took a walk along the platform. I overheard them just beneath the window of my compartment.
I wish to heaven you were out of this business, Mary.
It's no good talking about it.
Mary, I...
No, not now. When it's over, when it's all behind us, then...
And then they walked away. Curious, is it not? I was quite intrigued.
Do you always eavesdrop on romantic encounters, my friend?
I was not eavesdropping. I just happened to overhear it.
Now, who else have we? The German lady's maid, with whom you declined to share a compartment. I cannot say I blame you. She's exceedingly plain. And that very elegant couple over in the corner. So perfectly comme il faut.
I scarcely think that a week in Paris will really give us time.
But surely we promised Francis that we would be at Chevreuse on the 14th.
A very handsome couple. From his clothes, he looks as if he ought to be English, but...
I am certain they will not be at all put out if we arrive a day or two later.
No, certainly not English.
I would like a little time to consider my winter wardrobe. Budapest is always at least 6 months behind the times.
Very pretty and very chic. Is she not?
According to Michel's list, they are Hungarian. The Count and Countess Andreny.
She's quite charming. But something is worrying her.
Why can't you stop playing the detective for once?
I can never stop. And I never play, as you put it.
As for the other diners, we already know Mr. McQueen, with whom you are sharing a compartment, and his employer, your wild animal, who we saw at the hotel bar.
What is his name?
Ratchet. I suppose he's some sort of businessman. Well, it has all been most interesting, and I'm sorry that Balzac isn't with us, but now I have work to do. I will see you later, mon vieux.
Very well. I shall stay here and take a liqueur, perhaps. Thank you for an excellent meal, Monsieur Bouc.
Excuse me, sir. Could you oblige me with a light?
Of course.
Thank you. My name is Ratchet.
You're welcome to keep the matches, Mr. Ratchet.
I believe that I have the pleasure of speaking to Monsieur Hercule Poirot. Is that so?
You have been correctly informed, monsieur.
In my country, we come to the point quickly. I want you to take on a job for me, Mr. Poirot.
My clientele is extremely limited nowadays, Mr. Ratchet. I take on very few cases.
I did not imagine it would be otherwise, but I am talking big money here, Mr. Poirot. Very big money.
What is it that you wish me to do for you?
Let me put it this way. I am a rich man. I am a very rich man. and rich men inevitably do have enemies. Well, I have an enemy.
Just the one?
What exactly do you mean by that?
You say that men in your position have enemies. Generally, there are more than one.
Enemy or enemies, what does it matter? I'm only concerned about my safety. My life has been threatened. Not once, but several times, Mr. Poirot. Now, I'm the kind of man that reckons he can take care of himself.
Which is why you carry a small automatic in your inside pocket.
I can see nothing much escapes you. But there is no point in not making assurance doubly sure. That is why I want you to be my extra cover.
You want me to be your bodyguard?
I want you to find out where the threats are coming from. You are the man for my money, Mr. Poirot, and I do mean money. You can write your own check.
I regret, Mr. Ratchet, that I cannot oblige you.
Why the hell not? I told you the sky is the limit.
You do not understand, Mr. Ratchet. I have been very fortunate in my profession. I have made myself enough money to satisfy both my needs and my caprices. I take now only such cases as interest me.
You've got quite a nerve, Poirot. What is wrong with my proposition?
If you will forgive me for being personal, I do not like your face, Mr. Ratchet.
I would not stand about out here, my friend. It is bitterly cold.
I had hoped to get a little glimpse of Belgrade.
One town is much like another viewed from a railway station.
And it is snowing very heavily.
They say that they have seen nothing like it for years. I only hope that we are not held up. I'm not happy about it, I can tell you. But let's get back into the train. It is due to leave very shortly.
I have moved the gentleman's luggage into your compartment, Monsieur Bouc.
Thank you, Michel. Now you will have a first-class compartment to yourself, my friend.
But where will you go?
Oh, I have moved into the coach from Athens. It is attached to the train here.
Now, you are sure I'm not putting you to any inconvenience?
Well, not the least. It is more convenient like this. You are going through to Calais, so it is better that you stay in this coach. The Athens part of the train is empty, except for a Greek doctor and myself. Your compartment is number one, next to your good friend, Mr. Ratchet. Would you like Michel to show you where it is?
Oh, no, mon Dieu. I will find my way easily enough.
Till tomorrow, then. Good night. Bonne nuit.
Bonne nuit, Monsieur Bouc, and thank you.
But I thought the British were running the whole show out in India, Colonel. Say, I didn't expect to see you, Monsieur. I thought you were getting off the train at Belgrade.
No, you misunderstood me, I think, Mr. McQueen. I was merely changing my compartment. My luggage has been moved into number one.
Next to my boss.
Thank you, Mr. McQueen. Good night.
Good night, Monsieur. Say, why don't you come into my compartment, Colonel, and you can put me right about the thin part of yours over a glass or two of scotch.
You're sure you'll be all right now, Miss Olsen?
Yes, thank you. You have been very kind.
Take another aspirin and go to sleep.
Yes.
I'm sure you'll feel just fine in the morning.
I hope I will. Good night.
Sleep tight. Oh, good evening, Monsieur.
Good evening, Madame.
Poor creature. She's got the most frightful headache. She's a Swede. As far as I can make out, she's a missionary of some sort, a teaching one.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you were down the other end.
No, I have moved into the compartment of Monsieur Bouc, number one.
On the other side of Mr. Ratchet?
That is the one.
There's something wrong about that man. My daughter always says I'm very intuitive, and I've got a hunch about Mr. Ratchet. I've got the compartment next to his on this side, and I can tell you I don't like it one bit. I put all my grips against the communicating door. I thought I heard him trying the handle. I dare say I'm foolish, but there it is.
One can never be too careful, Mrs. Hubbard.
I'm downright scared of him. My daughter said I'd have an easy journey, but somehow I don't feel happy about it. I guess I'll turn in and read. Good night.
Good night, madame.
Good night, then, Mr. Ratchet.
Just a moment, Masterman.
Yes, Mr. Ratchet.
I'll take breakfast in the dining car tomorrow. Make sure I get my usual.
I'll see to it, Mr. Ratchet. Good night, Mr. Ratchet.
Evidence of Mr. Shepherd, manager of the bank. The emerald was deposited with him on March 25th by Mr. Petherick, the family solicitor.
On April the 15th,
Mr. Petherick. Oh, no. I'm getting too fatigued for all this. Time to go to sleep.
What was that? Nightmare. It must have been. The train is not moving. Are we at a station?
Monsieur Ratchet? Monsieur Ratchet?
Ce n'est rien. Je me suis trompé.
Viens, monsieur.
Strange how everything sounds so loud when the train is not moving. Oh, does no one ever sleep on this cursed train?
Yes, madame, what can I do for
what
you?
What took you so long? Oh, I could have been murdered here. There's someone in my compartment.
Oh, but Mrs. Hubbard, that is not possible. You can see for yourself, madame. There is no one here. It must have been a nightmare.
Oh, no.
Good night, madame. Sleep well.
Mon Dieu, is everyone on this train mad?
Yes, monsieur. Can I help you?
What is happening? Why is the train not moving?
Oh, it is most unfortunate. We have run into a snowdrift. Heaven knows how long we shall be here. The snow is falling very heavily. Already it is up to the top of the windows. It could be days before the line is clear.
Days?
I fear so, monsieur.
Where are we?
Between Vinkovci and Brod. And as if we did not have enough trouble, the American lady...
I heard her shouting.
She insists, absolutely insists, that there was a man in her compartment. Just imagine, monsieur, how could anyone conceal themselves in a space this size? But she would not listen to reason, as if there was not enough to worry about.
Well, I am sorry to add to your troubles, my friend, but if I might have a little bottle of mineral water...
Oh, of course, monsieur. Straight away.
What is it? Nothing. A woman in a red kimono walking away down the corridor. Decidedly, I suffer from the nerves.
I could not eat. My daughter told me I wouldn't have any trouble. Just get on the train, she said. Sit tight, and you'll be in Paris in no time. And now we may be here for days and days. My boat sails the day after tomorrow. I can't even wire to cancel my passage.
My sister and her children are waiting me. I can get no word to them. They will think something terrible has happened me.
Doesn't anyone have any idea how long we're likely to be here?
What is this country anyway?
Yugoslavia, I believe.
Oh, one of those Balkan things. What can you expect?
I suppose that somebody will come along and dig us out in the end. We shall just have to sit here and wait.
You are very patient, mademoiselle.
What else can one do?
Huh? You are a philosopher.
That implies a detached attitude. I think my own attitude is more selfish. I've learnt to save myself useless emotion.
Excuse me, monsieur.
Yes, what is it?
Monsieur Book presents his compliments. He would be grateful if you would be so kind as to spare him a few minutes of your time.
Not of course. Excuse me.
Ah, Poirot, my good friend, come in. You too, Michel. Ah, mon ami, we have need of you.
Well, what has occurred?
You may well ask. If it were not enough that we are cut off from the world by the snow...
But then?
Now a passenger lies dead in his berth, stabbed.
Which passenger?
Mr. Ratchet. The man is the next compartment to you.
Mr. Ratchet? That is very curious.
Curious? It is a disaster. A murder itself would be serious enough, but consider the circumstances. Who knows how long we may be stuck here in the snow? And there is something else. Mm. Passing through most countries, we have the local police on the train. But here, it is not so.
It is a position of great difficulty for you, I agree, but...
And there is worse to come. Dr. Constantine says... Oh, forgive me for not introducing you, but my mind is in a whirl. What is the company going to say to all this?
Monsieur, I am Dr. Constantine.
And I am Hercule Poirot.
Dr. Constantine is of the opinion that the man was killed between midnight and 2 in the morning.
It is difficult to say exactly in these matters, but that would be my guess.
When was the crime discovered?
I shall leave that to our conductor. Michel, tell Monsieur exactly what happened.
The valet, Monsieur Ratchet, Mr. Masterman, had instructions to order breakfast for his master in the dining car. When Monsieur Ratchet did not appear, and he could receive no answer from the compartment, he asked me for help.
What time was this?
About 11. I opened the door of the compartment with my key, but the chain was fastened across. I broke the chain. I thought at first that the gentleman must have had a fit. But then I saw...
The door was locked and fastened on the inside. It was not suicide?
Does a man who commits suicide stab himself in 10 or 12 different places?
That shows great ferocity.
It must have been a woman. Only a woman would kill a man like that.
If it was a woman, she must have been very strong. Some of the blows were delivered with such force as to drive through hard belts of muscle and bone.
It was not clearly a very scientific crime.
The question is, what are we to do now? Monsieur Poirot, I know your powers. I beseech you, please, take command of the investigation.
Oh, but Monsieur Bouc, I can scarcely...
No, please do not refuse. Just think. Eventually, the Yugoslav police will arrive. How simple if we can present them with a solution.
Simple?
But if we do not, there will be interminable delays and annoyances and endless embarrassment for the company. But if you can tell the police, this is the criminal...
Your faith touches me, Monsieur Bouc, and I must admit, this problem intrigues me. I was reflecting not 30 minutes ago that many hours of boredom lay ahead of me while we are stuck here, and now a problem arrives, ready to my hand.
Then... You will accept?
C'est entendu. You can place the matter in my hands.
Oh, I cannot express my gratitude. We are all at your service.
Now, to begin with, I should like a plan of the Istanbul-Kali coach with a note of the people who occupy the compartments, and I should also like to see their tickets and their passports.
Michel, will you see to that, please?
Of course, Monsieur Bouc.
Now, what other passengers are on the train?
Eh bien, in the Athens coach, Dr. Constantine and I are the only travelers. Mm-hmm. Beyond that are the ordinary carriages. But they do not concern us, since they were locked off from this part of the train after dinner had been served last night. Mm-hmm. And forward of the Istanbul-Kali coach is only the dining car.
Then it seems as though we must look for our murderer in the Istanbul-Kali coach.
At half an hour after midnight, we ran into the snowdrift. No one can have left the train since then.
So, we have established 2 things. The murderer is with us still on the train, and he or she is a passenger on the Istanbul-Calais coach.
Will you need to question all of them?
Certainly, Monsieur Bouc. Now, we must find somewhere to conduct the interviews.
I will get Michel to clear the passengers out of the restaurant car.
Ah, yes, Michel. We must put him on our list.
Michel? But he has worked with the company for years.
Nevertheless, we must overlook no one. Now, I think that while they are clearing the restaurant car, we should pay a call on Mr. McQueen. He may be able to enlighten us about his late employer.
So, they got him after all.
What exactly do you mean by that phrase, Mr. McQueen?
I must get this clear. Who exactly are you, gentlemen, and where do you come in?
I am a director de la Compagnie Internationale de Wagons-Lits, and this gentleman is a detective active on my behalf.
My name is Hercule Poirot.
You know the name, perhaps?
Why, yes, it does seem kind of familiar. Only I thought it was some kind of a woman's dressmaker.
It is incredible.
What's incredible?
No, it is nothing. Let us continue. I want you to tell me, Mr. McQueen, all that you know about the dead man. You were not related to him?
No. I was his secretary.
For how long have you held that post?
Just over a year. I met Mr. Ratchet when I was in Persia looking into an oil concession. It had all gone rather badly. Mr. Ratchet was staying in the same hotel. He just fired the guy who'd been his secretary. He offered me the job and I took it. I was glad to find a well-paid job, ready-made, as it were.
And what did it involve?
Very little. Mr. Ratchet wanted to see the world. He was hampered by knowing no languages. I worked more as a courier than as a secretary. It was a pleasant life.
Now, tell me all you can about your employer.
That's not so easy. I knew very little about him at all. Mr. Ratchet never spoke about himself or his life in America.
Why do you think that was?
I don't know. I guess he might have been ashamed of his beginnings. Some men are.
But you must have formed some theory about him.
Well, yes, I did. For one thing, I don't believe Ratchet was his real name. I think he left America in order to escape somebody or something. And he was pretty successful. Until a few weeks ago.
What happened then?
He began to get letters. Threatening letters.
Did he show them to you?
Oh, yes. It was my business to attend to his correspondence. The first letter came about 2 weeks ago. I got them in my briefcase. Do you want to see them?
Of course. This is why you said so they got him after all, hmm?
That's right. Here you are. This was the first letter.
Thought you'd double-cross us and get away with it, did you? We are out to get you, Ratchet, and we will get you.
And this came a few days later.
We are going to take you for a ride, Ratchet. Sometime soon we are going to get you. How very curious.
Pretty crude, aren't they?
This one was obviously written by two people, each writing a letter of a word at a time. Now tell me, how did Mr. Ratchet react when he received the first?
He passed it off with a laugh. But I could see there was quite a lot going on underneath.
Now tell me honestly, did you like your employer, Mr. McQueen?
No, I did not.
And why was that?
To tell you the truth, I disliked and distrusted him. He seemed to me to be a cruel and dangerous man. That's just a hunch. I've got no proof of it.
Well, thank you for being so honest. One further question. When did you last see Mr. Ratchet alive?
Last evening, about 10 o'clock. I went into his compartment to take down some memoranda from him.
On what subject?
Oh, nothing very exciting. Some stuff about tiles and antique pottery he'd bought in Persia.
Well, that is all for the present, Mr. McQueen. I should be obliged if you would keep the matter of Mr. Ratchet's death to yourself for a little time.
I'll do my best.
Thank you, Mr. McQueen. I shall be interviewing all the other passengers in the restaurant car very soon. But first, I think I had better view the body.
Oh, you will forgive me if I do not accompany you, mon cher, but one look was quite enough.
I thought it best to leave the window open, since that is the way we found it.
You did right, Doctor, but it is bitterly cold in here.
In my opinion, this open window is an attempt to deceive us that the murderer left that way. But if he had, there would have been traces in the snow, even supposing that he could have got through it at all. As you can see, there is nothing.
I agree with you, Doctor. And since there are no fingerprints, I think we may safely close the window.
The body is exactly as I found it. I opened the pajama jacket, that is all.
It is not pretty. Someone must have stood here and stabbed him again and again. How many wounds are there exactly?
There seem to be 12, but it is difficult to tell. The blows seem to have been delivered in a most haphazard and random way. One or two are so slight as to be practically scratches. On the other hand, at least 3 would be capable of causing death. And there is something else that puzzles me.
And what is that?
You see, these 2 wounds, here and here, they are deep. Each cut must have severed blood vessels, and yet the edges do not gape. they have not bled as one would have suspected.
Which suggests?
That the man was already dead. Some time dead when the blows were delivered, but that is surely absurd.
It would seem so.
And there is one other thing. You see this wound here, under the right arm?
Mm-hmm.
Could you pretend to deliver such a blow? Here, take my pencil.
I see what you mean. With the right hand it is almost impossible, but if the blow was struck with the left hand...
Exactly. And yet, some of these other blows are obviously right-handed.
Two people were involved in writing the threatening letters. Was the killing also carried out by two people? Was the electric light on?
No, the light over the bed had been turned off.
Eh bien. So we have here a hypothesis of the first and second murderer, as the great Shakespeare would put it. The first murderer stabbed his victim and left the compartment turning off the light. The second murderer came in the dark and stabbed at least twice at a dead man. What do you think of that?
Most ingenious.
You think so? It sounded to me a little like nonsense.
What other explanation can there be?
That is just what I am asking myself. Are there any other signs that would point to two people being involved?
I think there are. Some of the blows must have been relatively feeble, while others required great strength.
You mean they could only have been delivered by a man?
A young, vigorous, athletic woman might have struck them, especially if she were in the grip of a strong emotion. But, in my opinion, it is most unlikely.
And the victim? The victim. What does he do in all this? Does he cry out? Does he struggle? Does he... You see?
A pistol.
Then why did he not use it?
There's a glass on the wash basin. That's why.
Drugged?
Yes.
And in the ashtray, some fragments of charred paper. What do they have to tell us?
There's something on the floor.
A dainty little cambric handkerchief with an initial embroidered on it, H.
Then our friend, Monsieur Bouc, was right. There is a woman concerned in all
and
this.
Most conveniently, she leaves her handkerchief behind. And to make things easier for us, it is marked with an initial. Aha, what have we here?
A pipe cleaner.
And as far as I know, Ratchet did not smoke a pipe.
Oh, a valuable clue.
And dropped most conveniently for us to find. Was there any sign of a weapon?
None at all. But I failed to notice this when I examined the dead man.
His watch?
It was in his pajama pocket.
And it has been so badly dented that it has stopped at 1:15.
If that is the time he was attacked, then that agrees exactly with my own calculations.
It is possible, Doctor. It is certainly possible. But what I need now is a woman's old-fashioned hatbox.
What on earth for?
Perhaps the conductor will be able to help me.
I don't understand what you are trying to do, Monsieur Poirot. Can you explain?
It is fortunate that the Swedish lady should be so far behind the times. These two humps of wire were intended to keep the hat in shape. I trust she will not miss it.
But what are you planning to do with it?
Now watch carefully, Doctor. If I put this fragment of charred paper which we found in the ashtray between these two humps of wire and heat it slowly over my little spirit lamp, we may find something which may tell us about the crime.
I don't understand you. What do you expect to find from the burnt paper?
Watch carefully, Doctor. The paper is now held in place by the wire cages. If I light the spirit lamp and hold it under the paper... Do you see? Something is appearing. Can you read it?
I can just make out the words. Member Little Daisy Armstrong.
Daisy Armstrong. It is enough.
It tells you something.
It does. I know the real name of the dead man. I know why he had to leave America.
What was his name?
Cassetti.
Cassetti. Brings back something to me, but I cannot remember.
It was a crime in America, was it not?
Yes, it was in America. The Armstrong baby.
Of course. The little girl who was kidnapped and murdered.
Colonel Armstrong was an Englishman, a distinguished soldier, a V.C. He married the daughter of Linda Arden.
Linda Arden was a very famous actress in her time, I remember.
A great celebrity. The Armstrongs lived in America and had one child whom they worshipped. When she was 3 years old, she was kidnapped, and an impossibly high sum demanded as the price of her return.
And after the money had been handed over, they found the little girl's body.
She had been dead for at least a fortnight. Her mother, Sonia Armstrong, was expecting another child at the time. The baby was born dead, and Mrs. Armstrong died shortly after. Her poor husband shot himself.
Wasn't there another death? The housemaid or someone?
Yes, she was French or Swiss, I think. I can't remember now. The police were convinced that she was somehow involved, and in a fit of despair, she threw herself out of a window. And it was subsequently proved that she was absolutely innocent.
But surely the kidnapper was arrested, wasn't he?
Oh, yes, yes. Cassetti was arrested. He was the head of a kidnapping syndicate and enormously rich. He was also a blackmailer. Either through massive bribery or through fear of some private scandal, the court acquitted him. There was some technical inaccuracy in the indictment. You can well imagine the public outrage. Mm. Cassetti managed to get out of the country before he was lynched.
So, presumably, he has been living abroad under an assumed identity all this time. Mm. I cannot regret that he is dead. He deserved to die 100 deaths.
Even so, my friend, a murder is a murder. And it has to be investigated.
Do you think that the letter was deliberately burned so that Cassetti's death could not be connected with the Armstrongs?
Almost certainly.
Are there any members of the Armstrong family still living?
That, unfortunately, I do not know. I think I remember hearing of a younger sister of Sonia Armstrong, but I cannot be sure. Ah, that is what is so difficult about our present situation. We are cut off from the world. No telephone, no way of verifying the identity of the passengers.
So this lady could be among the people travelling on this train?
That remains to be seen. Ah, but the restaurant car must have been cleared by now. It is time to commence the examination.
Perhaps we might start with the conductor, Pierre Michel. Mm-hmm. He has been with the company for 15 years, and he has an excellent record. Honest and conscientious, but he's worried that someone might hold him responsible. He's not remarkable for his brain power.
It is a terrible thing to happen. In all these years working for the company, I have never known anything like it.
Calm yourself, my friend. Let us concentrate on the facts of the case. At what hour did Mr. Ratchett retire for the night?
Oh, almost immediately after dinner, monsieur. It was before we left Belgrade.
Did anyone go into his compartment afterwards?
His valet, Monsieur Masterman.
And that is the last you saw or heard of him?
Oh, no, monsieur. He rang his bell about 20 to 1, soon after we had stopped in the snow.
Tell us what happened.
I knocked on his door, but he called that he had made a mistake.
In English or French?
In French. He said, "Ce n'est rien, je me suis trompé."
That is true, I heard him myself. And then you went away?
Yes, monsieur. I went to answer another bell that had just rung.
And where were you at 1:15?
I was at my seat at the end, facing up the corridor.
You never left it?
I did, but only for a moment. I went into the Athens coach to speak to my colleague about the snow. That must have been soon after 1:00.
And when did you return?
One of my bells rang. You will remember, monsieur. The American lady was certain that somebody was in her compartment, and after that, you yourself rang.
And then?
I went to make up the bed in Monsieur McQueen's compartment.
And after that?
After that, I sat in my seat until morning.
And did you notice any of the passengers moving up or down the corridor?
One of the ladies went to the toilette at the far end, I think.
Past Monsieur Ratchett's compartment?
Yes, Monsieur Bouc.
Which lady?
I do not know, monsieur. She had her back to me. She was wearing a red kimono with dragons on it.
Uh-huh. Let us pass to another matter. Supposing that an assassin joined the train unnoticed last night, could he have left it after committing the crime?
I don't see how he could have done. The snow was right up to the doors and windows.
Could he be concealed anywhere on the train?
No, there has been a most thorough search. It is impossible.
And besides, no one could get into the sleeping car without my seeing them.
Now, the last stop was Vinkovtsi, was it not?
Yes, monsieur. We should have left there at 11:55, but we were nearly 20 minutes late because of the snow.
Did you yourself descend from the train?
Yes, monsieur. I got down on the platform as usual and stood by the step up into the train. The other conductors did the same.
One thing more. You said that another bell rang while you were knocking at Mr. Ratchett's door. Whose was it?
Princess Dragomirov's. She asked me to summon her maid.
You did so?
Yes, monsieur.
Right, that is all for the moment.
Monsieur does not blame me.
Oh, you have had the evil chance, my friend. Do not distress yourself. Could you tell me who alerted you that all was not well with Mr. Ratchett?
His valet, Monsieur Masterman.
Ah. Then I think we had better see him next.
Monsieur Book, I have instructed the men to clear the snow from the doors and windows. I trust that is in order.
There is no chance that the murderer may escape into the snow?
No, monsieur. It is piled up at least 6 feet on either side of the track.
Then go ahead and send Monsieur Masterman along to us.
There was nothing unusual about his being late for breakfast. Sometimes he wouldn't get up until lunchtime. But last night he made a particular point about my ordering his breakfast. That was why I was worried when he didn't answer.
At what time did you last see Mr. Ratchett?
Oh, it must have been about 9 o'clock last night, sir, or a little after.
And was there anything about his manner that struck you as unusual?
I think he was upset.
In what way?
Over a letter he'd been reading. He wanted to know how it came to be in his compartment. He inferred that I might have put it there. Of course, I told him that it was nothing to do with me. Then he started finding fault with things. He could be extremely trying when he was in a bad mood.
Was your master in the habit of taking a sleeping draught?
Always when travelling by train, sir. He said he couldn't sleep otherwise.
Can you tell us what the drug was?
Oh, I couldn't say. There was no name on the bottle. Just the sleeping draught to be taken at bedtime.
Did he take it last night?
Oh, yes, sir. I poured it into a glass and put it on top of the toilet table, ready for him.
You didn't actually see him drink it?
Oh, no, sir.
No. Tell me, Mr. Masterman, what was your opinion of your employer?
I have always made a point of never having an opinion of my employer, sir.
Even so?
Mr. Ratchett was always very generous, financially.
But did you like him?
Shall we put it, sir, that I don't care very much for Americans?
Have you ever been in America?
Oh, no, sir.
Do you remember reading in the papers of the Armstrong kidnapping case?
Oh, yes, indeed, sir. A little baby girl, wasn't it? A very shocking affair.
Did you know that your master was the principal instigator of that kidnapping?
Mr. Ratchett! Oh, I can't believe it. Is that true?
It is true, Mr. Masterman. Now, to pass on to your movements last night, what did you do after leaving Mr. Ratchett?
I went back to my own compartment and read.
And your compartment was...
Number 4 in the second class, next to the dining car.
You are sharing it with Signor Foscarelli.
Does he speak English?
Well, a kind of English, sir. He's been in America. Chicago, I understand.
Do you and he talk together much?
Oh, no, sir. I prefer to read.
What may I ask are you reading?
A Love's Captive by Mrs. Arabella Richardson.
A good story?
I find it highly enjoyable, sir.
Let us continue. You returned to your compartment and read Love's Captive till when?
Oh, at about 10:30, the Italian gentleman wanted to go to bed, so the conductor came and made the beds up.
And then you went to bed and to sleep?
I went to bed, sir, but, alas, not to sleep.
And why was that?
I had toothache.
Ah, it is very painful, the toothache. Did you do anything for it?
Oh, I applied some oil of cloves, which relieved the pain a little, but I was still not able to get to sleep. I turned the light on over my bed and went on reading, to take my mind off it.
And Signor Foscarelli?
Oh, he slept very soundly, sir. He snored a good deal, which was particularly trying.
Did he leave the compartment at all during the night?
Oh, no, sir.
And did you?
Oh, no, sir.
No. Well, there seems very little else to be said. Oh, by the way,
Are you a pipe smoker?
Oh, no, sir. Just the occasional cigarette.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Mr. Masterman. That will do.
I hope you won't think me presumptuous in mentioning it, sir, but the American lady, Mrs. Hubbard, is in something of a state and is carrying on rather considerably. She's saying she knows all about the murderer. I thought you ought to know, sir.
Well, thank you very much for drawing my attention to it. In that case, we had better see her straight away. Would you be so kind as to ask her to come along?
Of course, sir.
What I've got to tell you is this. I've heard they're saying there was a murderer on the train last night. Well, the murderer was in my compartment.
You are certain of this, madame?
Of course I'm certain. I was asleep, and suddenly something woke me up. And I knew right away there was a man in my compartment. I was so scared I couldn't even scream. I lay there and I thought, I'm going to be killed. What the hell was that?
It is nothing, Madame Hubbard. They are just clearing the snow from the windows.
I'm just a bag of nerves. I don't know what my daughter would say. Where was I?
You thought you were going to be killed.
Well, somehow I got my wits together. And I felt about with my hand, and I pressed the bell for the conductor. I rang and rang, but nothing happened. And I can tell you, I thought my heart was going to stop beating. Mercy, I thought to myself. Maybe they've murdered everyone on the train. The train was at a standstill, and there was an eerie silence everywhere. Then I heard footsteps coming along the corridor, and the conductor knocked at the door. I screamed at him to come in, and I switched the light on. And would you believe it? There wasn't a soul there.
Oh. Are you sure it wasn't just a nightmare, madame?
That's just what the conductor said. He was convinced I dreamed up the whole damn thing. I made him look under the seat, though he said there wasn't room for the man to squeeze himself in there. It was plain enough that someone had been in and had got away again.
But how do you think he could have got away?
Well, you know, I got it into my head that it was the man from the next compartment, the fellow that's been killed. I have to admit I didn't like the look of him from the start. There was something about him that really frightened me. I told the conductor to look at the connecting door between my compartment and his, and sure enough, it wasn't bolted.
But, madame, if you were so frightened of this man, why didn't you make sure that the door was bolted before you went to sleep?
Oh, I did.
You did?
Well, as a matter of fact, I asked that Swedish lady to see if it was bolted, and she said it was.
How was it that you could not see it yourself?
Because I was lying down on my bed and my sponge bag was hanging on the door handle. She'd come into my compartment to see if I'd got an aspirin.
And what time was this?
It must have been around 10:30 or 10:45. Poor soul, she was in a state. She even opened the door of the next compartment by mistake.
Monsieur Ratchets?
She was most distressed about it. He laughed, apparently, and I rather fancy he said something not quite nice. Poor thing, she was all in a flutter.
Did you hear any noise from Mr. Ratchet's compartment?
Well, not exactly.
What do you mean by that?
He snored.
And did you hear him snore after the scare about a man being in your compartment?
How could I? He was dead.
Ah, yes. How stupid of me. Mrs. Hubbard, do you remember the affair of the Armstrong kidnapping?
Yes, indeed, I do. And that evil killer got clean away with it. I'd have been happy to turn the switch on the electric chair myself.
He did not get away with it, Mrs. Hubbard. He is dead. He died last night.
You mean it was him? The man next door? Didn't I say he had an evil face? My daughter says I've got a nose for that kind of thing.
Were you acquainted with any of the Armstrong family, madame?
No, they moved in a very exclusive circle. But I've always heard Mrs. Armstrong was a perfectly lovely woman and her husband worshipped her.
Mrs. Hubbard, you have helped us very much. Oh, by the way, do you have a scarlet silk kimono?
Mercy me, what a question. I've got two dressing gowns, as a matter of fact. There's a pink flannel one that was quite cozy on board ship, and a purple silk affair my daughter gave me. Why do you want to know about a scarlet one? Tell me, it sounds interesting.
Well, you see, madame, someone in a kimono of that color entered your compartment or that of Mr. Ratchet last night.
I can tell you that no scarlet kimono came into my room.
Banshee must have gone into Mr. Ratchet's.
That wouldn't surprise me any.
Do you mean that you heard a woman's voice in his room?
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I did.
But when I asked you just now if you heard anything from next door, you said you only heard Mr. Ratchet snoring.
Well, it wasn't a very nice thing to talk about.
Hmm. Was this before or after you thought there was a man in your compartment?
It was before, of course. He wouldn't have had a woman talking to him if he was dead, would he?
Decidedly not. Ah, you must think I am a very slow-witted...
And I didn't think there was a man in my room. He was there, all right. And what's more, I've got proof of it. You see this button? It's certainly not one of mine. I found it this morning when I got up.
But this is a button from the tunic of a wagonlit attendant.
Perhaps it came off the conductor's uniform when he was searching your room last night.
I just don't know what's the matter with you people. Why can't you just accept what I saw? I was reading a magazine. When I turned the light out, I placed the magazine on a little case that's standing over by the window. Have you got that?
Yes, madame.
Very well, then. The conductor looked under the seat from near the door, and then he bolted the communicating door to the next compartment. He never went anywhere near the window. He was only in my compartment a minute or so. Well, this morning, that button was lying right on top of the magazine. What do you call that, I should like to know?
That, madame, I call evidence.
So now do you believe that the killer was in my compartment last night? Well, do you?
I simply cannot understand it, Monsieur Poirot. The button that Mrs. Abbott found is undoubtedly that of a wagonlit conductor's uniform.
It is certainly very curious.
But does this mean that Michel is somehow involved? Oh, it simply cannot be. He has been working for the company for 15 years.
The button suggests possibilities, I agree, Monsieur Bouc, but we must not allow ourselves to be sidetracked. Let us consider the facts. The murdered man of Ratchet was the kidnapper and killer of the Armstrong baby in America. Our most likely course of investigation is to pursue a link between one of the passengers and the Armstrong family.
We still have 8 passengers to question. In the first class, there are Princess Dragomirov, Count Andreny and his beautiful young countess, Colonel Arbuthnot, and Mr. Hardman.
Who is an American, if I am not mistaken.
Mm. And then there are the passengers in the second class you have not yet interviewed. Fräulein Schmidt, the princess's maid, Antonio Foscarelli, Miss Debenham, and the Swedish lady, Miss Olsen.
Ah, the one who looks rather like a sheep that has lost its way.
Oui.
Well, let us commence with her.
And the dead man was responsible for this terrible crime?
Yes, mademoiselle.
And to think that I nearly walked into his compartment last night.
You opened his door?
It was a stupid mistake. I was much ashamed.
But did you actually see him, mademoiselle?
Yes, I did. He was reading a book. I apologized quickly and closed the door.
And did he say anything to you?
He laughed and he said something which I did not quite understand. I suspect it was not very polite.
And what did you do after that?
It was the American lady I had gone to see, Mrs. Hubbard. I had a headache and she had offered me some aspirin.
And did she ask you whether the communicating door between her compartment and that of Mr. Ratchet was bolted?
Yes, she did. I had a look and it was. I understood why she was frightened. I would not have liked to have slept next to such a man.
And after that?
I went back to my own compartment. I took the aspirin and I lay down.
Mm. Now, you are sharing a compartment, I believe, Mademoiselle Olsen.
Yes, I am, with an English lady. She was coming from Baghdad.
And did you have the upper or the lower berth?
The lower one.
And did the English lady, Miss Debenham, did she leave the compartment after the train left Vinkovtsi?
No. I am sure that she did not. I am very light sleeper. If she had come down from the berth above, I should have awakened.
Did you yourself leave the compartment at any time?
No, monsieur. Not until this morning.
Hmm. Tell me, Mademoiselle Olsen, do you have a scarlet silk kimono?
Scarlet silk?
What should I do with such a garment? I have a good, comfortable dressing gown of Jaeger material.
And the lady with you, Miss Debenham, what color is her dressing gown?
She has a pale mauve ebbe, such as you buy in the East.
Have you ever been in America, Mademoiselle Olsen?
Oh, no. I very nearly went there once. I was to go as a companion to an invalid lady, but at the last moment it was all cancelled. It was a great pity. I wished very much to see the United States. Mm.
Thank you, Mademoiselle. That is all.
That is all?
Yes, Mademoiselle Olsen.
Do you wish I ask anyone to come along to talk with you?
For the moment, no.
Goodbye, then.
I will tell you who is the murderer, my friend. It is Foscarelli, the big Italian who looks like a bandit. That is the way they kill in Sicily, with a knife. And not once, but many times.
Mm. It says in his passport that he was born in Milan.
What difference does it make? It is quite obvious. He and this man, Ratchet, were in the kidnapping business together. What did you say Ratchet's real name was?
Cassetti.
Well, there you are, then. Criminals always fall out with one another. Cassetti must have double-crossed this man Foscarelli, and this is his revenge.
Forgive me for disturbing you, Monsieur Bouc, but the chef is most anxious to speak with you. He is very concerned about the supplies of food. What is he to do for fresh vegetables?
Michel, this button was found in the American lady's compartment. It is yours, I think.
Oh, no, Monsieur Bouc. There must be some mistake. As you can see, I have lost no button.
It is fairly certain that this button was dropped by the man who was in Mrs. Hubbard's compartment last night, when she rang the bell.
But I have told you, Monsieur Bouc, there was no one there. The lady must have imagined it.
Even so, Michel, I should like you to talk to the other conductors on the train and make sure that they all have their buttons.
Yes, Monsieur Bouc.
And perhaps you would be so kind as to ask the Princess Dragomirov whether she wishes to present herself here, or whether she would prefer me to wait upon her in her own compartment.
Yes, Monsieur. Of course.
Monsieur Bouc, perhaps you should go and call upon the chef, my friend. You have the good name of the Compagnie des Vagondis to consider.
Oui, bien sûr. But what about the investigation?
Oh, I have no doubt that somehow or other I shall manage to conduct it in your absence.
There is no reason why I should be treated differently from any of the other passengers. A murder has taken place. You must interview everyone. I understand my duty, monsieur.
You are most amiable, madame.
What can I tell you?
You are traveling home from Istanbul, I understand.
Yes, I have been staying at the Austrian embassy.
Now, madame la princesse, for the purposes of my investigation, I need a brief account of your movements last night from dinner onwards, if you would be so kind.
Movements? I didn't move at all. The conductor made up my bed while I was in the dining car. I retired immediately after dinner. I read until 11 the memoir of Saint-Simon and then turned out my light. But I couldn't get to sleep. I suffer from a rheumatic complaint that is particularly disturbing at night.
Most distressing. I can understand, madame.
At about 12:45, I rang for my maid and asked her to massage me. She then read aloud to me until I felt sleepy. I cannot say exactly at what time she left me. It might have been 1:30, it might have been later.
Your maid, now, what is her name?
Hildegard Schmidt.
And has she been with you for a long time?
Her people came from an estate of my late husband's in Germany. She has been in my service for 15 years.
You have been in America, I presume, madame?
Many times, monsieur.
Were you at any time acquainted with the Armstrong family? The family who suffered the great tragedy of the kidnapping and death of their little daughter.
They were personal friends of mine, monsieur.
Ah.
You knew Colonel Armstrong well, then?
I knew him slightly, but his wife, Sonia, was my goddaughter. And I was on terms of close friendship with her mother, Linda Arden. She was one of the great actresses of the world. In France, she would have been a renowned Phèdre and Romaque. I always thought her wasted on the superficial entertainments of Broadway.
She is dead?
No, she is alive, but she lives in complete retirement and seclusion. Her health is very delicate, and she has to lie on the sofa most of the time. But why should you wish to know about the Armstrongs?
I will explain, madame. The man who was killed last night was the man who was responsible for the kidnapping and murder of the Armstrong child.
You mean that odious man was Cassetti? Then I can only say that his murder was entirely justified.
Can you tell me anything about Sonia Armstrong's younger sister? Do you know where she is living?
I cannot tell you, monsieur. I have lost touch with the younger generation. I believe that she married an Englishman some time ago, and presumably she went to live in England. But I cannot recall his name. Perhaps it will come to me. Is there anything further you wish to ask me?
Only one thing, Madame la Princesse. A somewhat personal question. What is the color of your dressing gown?
I must suppose you have a reason for such a question. My dressing gown is of blue satin.
I am much obliged to you for answering my questions with such understanding.
You will excuse me, monsieur, but may I ask you your name? Your face is somehow familiar to me.
My name, madame, is Hercule Poirot.
Hercule Poirot. Yes, I remember now. This is destiny. Au revoir, monsieur.
Oh, qu'est-ce que c'est?
Oh, it is nothing to be excited about, I'm afraid, mon ami. They are sounding the whistle in the hope that someone may hear us. Things are becoming serious. We have food only for another 24 hours. There is no mineral water and a precious little caviar. It is not the kind of service that our passengers expect on board the Orient Express.
And to cap it all, you have a murderer on the train.
At least it provides a little divertissement. But are you any nearer a solution?
I have not yet completed my investigation.
So, who are you going to question next?
The Comte and Comtesse Andrigny.
They are from the Hungarian embassy. You must tread very cautiously there, my friend.
I did not consider it necessary that my wife, the Countess, should come along to see you as well. There is little that we can do to assist you. We were asleep and heard nothing.
Are you aware of the identity of the deceased, Monsieur le Comte?
I understood that it was the American, with the decidedly unpleasant face.
I mean, did you know the name of the man?
He was never introduced to me. Surely his name was on his passport.
The name on his passport was Ratchet, but his real name was Cassetti. Does that mean anything to you?
Nothing at all, I'm afraid.
You have perhaps been in America, Monsieur le Comte?
I was in the embassy in Washington for a year.
You knew perhaps the Armstrong family?
Armstrong? It is difficult to recall. One meets so many people. But to come back to the matter of this man's death, what more can I do to assist you?
I need to know, at what hour did you retire last night? You and the Countess have separate but adjoining compartments, I think.
Numbers 12 and 13. We asked the conductor to make up number 12 for the night while we were in the dining car. On returning, we sat in the upper compartment and played piquet for a while. About 11 o'clock, my wife retired to bed for the night. The conductor made up my compartment. I also went to bed. I slept until morning.
And Madame la Comtesse?
My wife always takes a sleeping draught when travelling by train. She took her usual dose of Trionol. I'm sorry I'm not able to assist you in any way.
Now, if possible, I would like to have a little word with Madame la Comtesse.
It will not be necessary. She can tell you nothing more than I already have.
Doubtless, doubtless. Nevertheless, I must see her. It will be a mere formality, but you understand, it is necessary for my report.
As you wish, monsieur. I will ask my wife to call on you.
He didn't look very pleased. What on earth did you say to him?
Do you have the passports of the Comte and Comtesse, Monsieur Bouc?
Oui, it is here. There is only one. It is a joint passport.
Thank you. Accompanied by his wife. Someone has dropped a spot of grease on it. What does it say? Elena Maria, I think. Maiden name Goldenberg, age 20.
It is a diplomatic passport. We must be careful, my friend, not to give offense.
We are investigating a murder, Monsieur Bouc.
Even so, the Andrenies are important people, and it is important to the Compagnie des Wagons-Lits that the Hungarian government...
Never fear, mon vieux. I am behaving with the utmost tact.
Monsieur Bouc?
Oui, Michel, what is it?
I have checked with the other conductors. Neither of them has lost a button, and they swear that they have never been near the compartment of Madame Hubert.
Ah? Bien. Thank you, Michel.
Madame la Comtesse Andreny is here, Monsieur Poirot.
Then ask her to be so kind as to come along.
Yes, Monsieur. Will you come this way, Madame la Comtesse?
I beseech you, Poirot, do not say anything that may upset her.
I understand that you wish to question me, Monsieur.
A mere formality, Madame la Comtesse. Please sit down. It is only to ask you if you saw or heard anything last night that may throw any light on this matter of the murder.
Nothing at all, Monsieur. I was asleep.
You did not hear, for instance, a commotion going on in the compartment next to yours? The American lady who occupies it became quite hysterical and rang for the conductor.
I heard nothing, Monsieur. I had taken a sleeping draught.
Of course. Well, I need not detain you any further.
Thank you, Monsieur.
One little detail. These particulars here on your passport, your maiden name, age, and so forth, they are correct?
Of course they are correct.
You will forgive me for asking, but did you accompany your husband on his visit to Washington?
No. We were not married then. Our wedding took place only last year.
Of course, yes. How stupid of me. By the way, does your husband smoke?
Yes, he does.
A pipe?
No. Cigarettes and cigars. What makes you ask that question?
Oh, you understand, detectives ask all sorts of questions. For instance, what is the color of your dressing gown, Madame la Comtesse?
It is corn-colored chiffon. Is that really important?
Very important indeed.
Forgive me, but I do not quite understand what your function is in all this. I thought that there were no detectives on the train on its passage through Yugoslavia.
I am not a Yugoslavian detective.